Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know. From masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Go.
The timer's not on.
Motherfucker!
You didn't do it.
I'm doing it now. I'll do it live.
We're doing it live.
I'm doing it live. Broadcasting from the Radioactive Bunker, this is Real Spoilers, episode 770, Godzilla. I don't have any funny ones because it's just Godzilla. And Tom's not here to...
You could have changed the addition.
Right.
I wasn't going to put any sort of racially insensitive inflections in my voice either.
Well, no. What you do is you say Godzilla.
Are you saying Tom would have done that?
I would not put it past him.
You say Godzilla times one.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Dollar. Yeah, right, yeah. Squared. Godzilla squared. This is Real Spoilers, obviously. You know all that good stuff. I am here. Let's go around the virtual table real quick.
I like Joe trying to figure out the order that the
I know.
Intro
I was
goes.
Like, I don't have to do this. I don't have to think about this
I
stuff.
I think this is the first episode you've ever done the intro on.
But
the
I
proper...
do a bunch. Yeah, I say that's on the Patreon.
Yeah,
I don't have to do all that stuff.
Go, on that one, you go. You know the drill. All right,
yeah,
let's start.
Let's roll.
And you don't actually
let's
do it.
Get into it.
All right, this is Kevin.
Matt, that's you.
Oh, is it my
turn? He's part
yeah.
of. He's in rotation.
This is Matt.
And this is Joe.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, it's
that's
we're,
quite the honor.
He's I feel like he's earned the green jacket at this point. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Before we get this thing started, let's get the good stuff out of the way. You can follow us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, I don't know, all that.
I like how he's gonna say the names of all the ones that don't exist
that don't exist anymore. Yeah.
iTunes.
Stitcher, right? Stitcher
Apple still Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts. Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
Google
Zune.
Google Play is not around
Google
anymore.
Play. What else was there?
It's YouTube Music.
They did keep their TV going, though. You know, look.
Yeah, for like $80 a month.
Is that what it is, really?
Yeah, that price went way up.
No way.
What do you get for that?
It used to be like $50. It's cable, but on the internet.
Oh, no. Not doing that. Look.
I want to say it's like $70 a month, but you add stuff to the packet. You know, you get the sports thing or whatever you can add on to it.
They get you with the add-ons.
Yeah, I'm not doing all that. Here's the deal.
What if they're our sponsor, Joe? And speaking of that,
yeah, wait.
To our sponsor.
Oh, by the way,
yeah.
Do you want to get your real hard? Talk to Blue Chew. No, I don't.
Oh, wow. This isn't Patreon.
I guess that's true. I can't say that. You have to edit that.
No, you can't say that.
No, I can't say that. Look, you know where to find us. You can go to Twitter or X. I guess you can call it now. You can go to Facebook. You can join the League of Show Shares. That's where you know. That's the best discussion that you can find. All kinds of good stuff on there. And if you are in the League of Show Shares and you do share a show, you get your name right on the show.
What do you know? Hey,
Kevin, that's you, buddy.
That show, I have this great list compiled. Sorry we missed you last week. Tom was going out of the country and all this stuff, and Tom's still not back into the country. So I'm going to do the best I can
obviously.
Here. So here's the list that we've got. Glenn Cougar Melon Brewer, Chris Valls, Chris Sanders. I got to look down real. Chris Magic.
There's a trick. The Chris trifecta.
The trifecta, right? Brendan. Did I just say Brendan McGuckin, or do I say Brendan Conterfloof McGuckin?
You got to say Brendan McGuckin.
Brendan McGuckin.
Yeah.
Heather Sachs, Lane Levanway, Ralph Tribble, Julianne Jordan, Dissect That Film, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Tom Dowdy. We've already said Chris Magic Man. We don't say that again.
Nope.
Going over to the tweets, that was the Facebook shares that Joe mentioned. Also, share our stuff on Twitter. We've got Corey Tatum, a.k.a. Wrestling Snapshots. He does get some good wrestling shots. Check him out.
Yes, he does.
Invasion of the Remake, Mike and Oscar, Geek to Me Radio, David Rojas, Return of the Mac, Colby Mac himself.
He has returned
back again to enlighten us on film on Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it. Binge Movies, Nostalgia Cast, Ronnie Castle, Ryan L. Terry, In Session Film, Feelin' Film, Matt Neglia, and maybe or maybe not Joe Batista.
I shared it.
He said it's on Facebook. I said I'm not refreshing it, so apparently Joe would like to get credit because he shared it technically a few seconds before we started recording. So
I did it.
For what it's worth. If you don't think that counts, don't listen to it.
That's fair. Just don't listen to it from the link that I shared. Listen to the show. Just not from the link that I shared.
No, you have to. Every time Joe comes on today, you have to mute him because
that's on you. That's what it would be like that Fantastic Four episode all over again.
No, this is Choose Your Own Adventure. You do it. You mute when you want to mute.
Poor Dan didn't get his 2 cents in on that Fantastic Four episode.
So Matt, you've joined us on several episodes before. Can you
wait? Don't forget YouTube.
Well, yeah,
YouTube. Follow us on YouTube,
Matt. First of all, can you tell them to follow us on YouTube?
Yes.
Yes. Could you follow on YouTube and sign up for YouTube TV?
We're the Real Spoilers channel on YouTube TV.
Oh, man, that'd be great.
So, Matt, regale us with the fine films that you've been on here before. Do you even remember?
I think it's only been a couple. The first one, I think, was Captain America Civil War.
Okay.
That's a good one.
And then after that, it was Blade Runner sequel. And then
it's not bad.
Dune.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. Yeah,
right. some big time episodes.
Yeah.
I was going to say sometimes
two from the same director, so.
Yeah. Villeneuve.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah.
Or Denis Villeneuve.
That's what I'm going to call him from now on.
So, no, that's great. We always love having Matt on, and he's a friend of the show. He's on the League of Show Shares that Joe mentioned a lot, and so we're happy to have you back
because he's a big time contributor.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a top fan, I believe.
Yes, I got my badge and everything.
Did you print out your certificate, have it framed? It's a big deal. Top fan on
I should have done that and put that behind me here.
You should have. So you're our Godzilla expert, so thank you for joining us for this.
You're welcome.
And he's our Godzilla expert, but hasn't been on any Godzilla episodes.
Well,
that's all right.
To be fair, he didn't bump Joel Hodgson.
That's fair.
That definitely wasn't going to happen.
Joel, we appreciate you wanting. I mean, it's cute you want to come on the show, but yeah. we got Matt Reedy,
baby,
Godzilla expert.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Let me get off
the phone. So, Joe, what's your? We know Matt's the expert. What's your deal with Godzilla?
So, Godzilla was. I mean, when I was a kid, those Godzilla movies were a big part of like my VHS experience, right? Like it was, you go to the video store, whether it was the mom and pop's places. Blockbuster really didn't show up in St. Louis until like 1993.
Can you plug some of the mom and pop stores?
I wish I could, man. I wish I could. There was
let me think. That are still around.
There was Star Video, and that was like a local mom and pop's place. So they had like
you
multiple.
Just liked the selection behind the curtain, though.
That was the place where I found the curtain. That's true. So there was that one. There was Video Village. There was, Movies to Go. And those were like the three that I remember going to as a kid. And
you
then Block-
Hollywood Video? Or were you, I don't really, you just that's Blockbuster?
So Hollywood showed up later. Mm-hmm. And I would go to Hollywood, but their selection wasn't always as good.
You didn't get the Pirates made for Blockbuster. That's
true.
Cut.
No, you got the like Pirates cut. Like that's what that the booty cut, if you will. I would always grab, and you know, there was Godzilla, and then there was like Gamera, which was kind of, you know, was a Godzilla knockoff. Those old Japanese monster movies were great. and I would watch them all the time. And I stopped watching them after a while. But Godzilla, I think, is one of those pop culture icons at this point that, I don't know. Can you put them up there with Superman and Mickey Mouse and Spider-Man? And I think you can.
As far as recognizability?
Yeah.
Pretty big.
Close. Yeah. So, literally big.
Yeah, legit big.
So, Matt, I need you to start working on your Steamboat Godzilla t-shirt for, you know, that's next month.
Is it really?
Yeah. You better get the public domain. You got to get that design up for us for putting on our shirts.
Because Steamboat Willie's up?
Yeah.
Do it. Do
so I think he is super recognizable, and the way that I learned about Godzilla growing up was all the parodies, all the references
sure.
in pop culture, right? I mean, he's just over and over and over, he shows up in popular media, and I've only seen the original and then all the American ones.
Oh my God,
the
there's so many movies.
The Ego Girl one, all, you know, those are the ones that I've seen.
So Godzilla versus Bambi.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Really? Uh-huh. Oh.
It's very funny.
It's a quick watch. It's about 30 seconds. So,
I don't have a large history, and that's why we really got to bring Matt in, and especially if there's references and things, because I don't know a lot, you know, aside from the original. And this one, to me, seems to have a feel very close to the original. I don't know if they've ever gone back to that. Like, maybe you could tell us, Matt, a little bit about all the movies that came out since Godzilla in what, 50, was it like early 50s?
Oh, no, 1950, almost 70 years.
Yeah, 1956, yeah, I think.
54 was
54?
The
54, yeah, okay, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, because it's 70th anniversary next year. So, yeah, this new movie borrows heavily from the first one, but also borrows heavily from one of the movie came out in 2000. It's got the longest title. You have to forgive me. It's called Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack, which is a mouthful. Right. So they call it GMK for short.
Okay.
So this is almost like a mashup of those two movies.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that. Sense.
Yeah, it borrows. As we get into the story, I'll explain which parts borrow.
Okay.
From that.
Okay.
And the director made that clear, too, in the interviews, that's his favorite Godzilla movie, so that's why he kind of called back to that one.
Interesting.
But there's callbacks to a lot of stuff not Godzilla in there, obviously. I'm sure you guys noticed all the Jaws references.
The first thing, when he shows up on the boat and they're all on the... I'm like, this feels like Jaws, which was really cool for a Godzilla movie.
You've got the doctor, you've got the captain, and then you've got your main character. But I did like that where they're all kind of on the boat. And I was like, okay, I see what we're doing. I'm with it.
Yeah.
The only thing that killed me, and I know this is a movie about Godzilla, but when they're firing that huge gun with no ear protection, that's got to be so loud, right?
It is the 50s, though. So, you know, like maybe.
I know, but when you're right next to a huge caliber gun like that, I was just thinking like, oh, my gosh.
That is funny.
It just completely took me out of the movie.
The whole thing, right?
The giant radioactive lizard didn't bother me, but the... No ear protection.
Before we get started, I just want to say,
we haven't started yet.
No,
oh boy.
I cannot believe how incredible this movie is. And I tweeted that it's amazing to see how different the American Godzilla compared to the Japanese Godzilla movies are. Where I think I've said on the other Godzilla episodes, it's like I don't care about the people. Like, just smash things, right? Like, that's what I want to see. And then you get this one where you're like, oh, like, you're telling a story. Like, you're telling a very important story. This movie opens with a kamikaze pilot landing on an island, telling the people who are the mechanics on the island that his plane malfunctioned, which is why he couldn't carry out his mission. And for those that don't know, kamikaze pilot, they were pilots in the Japanese Air Force that were basically like tied to their plane, and they were just told to dive bomb whatever they could and sacrifice their own life and do as much damage as much as they could. And
it was considered a great honor, as what they told them to justify that kind of mission.
Right. And
by the way, did his excuse kind of didn't hold water from the get-go, because if he could fly the plane,
right,
could he not,
yes,
you know, if he could fly to the island, he probably could have flown to the wherever he was supposed to ram the plane.
I guess he was saying that it felt like it didn't feel right, and so he wanted to land it before he, you know, before it stopped working, before he could get there or something. I mean, but yeah, I mean, the guy, he lands and the mechanic, the head mechanic there is instantly like,
hey,
we're not finding anything wrong with this plane.
Your plane looks fine.
They're on Odo Island. They mention Odo Island in the first movie?
Yes, it is. It's in the first movie.
So, okay, right there from the get, I'm like, this thing is really tying in. Now, do we know, is this a sequel, a remake? Like, where does this fit in the timeline?
I think it's just a redo. It's a redo. Standalone.
Okay, that's what I was kind of thinking.
It's a standalone, kind of like with Shin Godzilla before this.
Yeah,
so I've never seen that, and I hear so many good things.
Oh, that's great.
You should watch that. It's so good.
I know. Last time we mentioned it, I said, I know Matt Reed is just yelling at his computer that I haven't seen it yet. But that's so that's good to know, too, because I kind of got the feeling it was a remake because it seemed like it was around a similar time period, and they don't necessarily – it's not like they mention events happening in the periphery that are going on. Right. They're like, oh, yeah, that's happening during the first movie. So,
I see what you're saying.
You could watch this if you've never seen any Godzilla movies.
That's correct. Correct.
And I do – you know, it's I saw this at the Draft House, as I do.
Nice.
And I got it, the theater was sold out.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know that happens. And this is, we should say, this is a foreign film. Like, it's not in English. It's not dubbed. I saw it subtitled. And I don't think that happens anymore. I don't think that a foreign film gets a sold out screening the night it's released, even a main release in America like that.
I mean, awards wise, so we're in Oscar season.
That's true.
So, I mean, if you're talking about movies that have a lot of buzz out of the festivals and they open here, you might get a big sellout because it's been talked up and people are clamoring for the.
I do think that you'll get a sellout, but it's not the crowd that I had, which was. I mean, it ran the spectrum of people where, I mean, there's no way I could properly identify, you know, you go to a foreign film that is up for, like, you know, best foreign flick. You've got a certain crowd at that screening. This is like college kids.
They're wearing like top hats and monocles.
Yes, that's exactly right. They still dress up to go to the theater. Yeah. Like, it's an event.
But what I mean is there's some that break out though, like Parasite.
Yes. Fair. Totally fair. Yeah, that's
Parasite's
a great call.
Box office, I just looked up, $262 million, and that was an art house film that turned into...
But did that do that post-win or pre-win?
I think pre-win it was really popular.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they re-released it and had a long stay, but I just mean there are certain films that do break out of that and become, even though they're foreign films, they get adopted, you know, here in America where people are just like, I got to go see this movie. And it's really cool when that happens because there are so many great foreign films that don't get theatrical releases or at least a wide release, and people just never see them because they're scared off by the subtitles or whatever.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I do think the subtitles will scare off the quote unquote common movie goer, because it is like it takes a certain you got to change the way you watch a movie when you're doing subtitles. With a movie like this especially, I appreciate that they do all of the talking and the acting and all that stuff, and then when Godzilla shows up, it's just like on the bottom of the screen, it's just screaming. Like, that's
right.
Like, they don't have, you know, they let you focus on the everything that's going on with the big special effects. And American filmmakers need to look at this movie and figure out what they're using, what they're doing, because this movie is absolutely stunning CG.
You know what the budget was for this movie?
I don't
15
even
million.
That's insane.
That's it.
That's crazy.
No,
that's crazy. Because
that's 1/10 of, like, say, the American Godzilla movie.
Yeah. Whether it's the way Godzilla, and I will say the way Godzilla moves in this is very reminiscent of, not the original one, but I feel like ones that came later.
But he does kind of walk like a person in a suit. Like, the way they make it look, they do. When
they go
back in the city and he's like walking, it looks like that. But the quality, right? There's
it's very detailed. Unbelievable.
But I like how they did keep the just a guy in a
suit. He's got the big thighs, and, you know, it does kind of look
walks slow. He's just kind of waddling.
Even the swimming scene where the Jaws scene where he's going after the boat.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Kind of like a it kind of looked like a suit.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's so cool.
It didn't look CGI to me. I was just wow, this looks pretty good.
Yeah, they got this giant lizard. That's pretty good.
When he pops out of the water.
Oh man.
You know, and you see just the face and all the detail, and he's huge because at that point, now we've jumped way ahead, but I think that there was another H-bomb dropped and it like supercharged him, and so he became massive.
If you want to go back to where you started, where he was on Odo Island, he was a smaller version. He wasn't radioactive on
that, which I thought was interesting because I was like, because in the first one he's just huge, right? He doesn't grow in the first one.
Yes,
so
correct.
I haven't seen a lot in between, and I'm sure there's different versions
actually,
all throughout.
To Kevin, to that point, I think it's on HBO Max. I think HBO Max has the Criterion stuff. So the original one is there.
It is.
Which I think is kind of fun.
But he doesn't grow. He's big when he's on Odo Island. He's big the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought this was interesting because he's big, right? He's big. I'm not saying it's not a massive dinosaur like they call him basically. Like he's huge, but he's not building smashing. And so it was interesting how it started like that, and then we see as years go on, basically the main character is one of two survivors. I was going to say sole survivor.
Right.
But there's two of them. The head mechanic guy.
Yes.
Who really lays it on thick about blaming him.
When he gives him that stack of pictures.
And, I know, man.
Yeah. And what I like about it, and this is the other thing about this movie, is the original movie deals with topics about like Japanese fear, like the atomic fear, all of that stuff is woven into that movie, where it's not, you know, I think it's not just what the movies became, where it is just smashy smash and nobody really cares, but that first one does have like a lot of tone and message that's not carried over, and this one is the same thing. This deals with a lot of survivor's guilt, PTSD. You know, there's all of these different tones. Lots of trauma.
I mean, the whole thing is this Koichi, I think, is the main character's
name.
Koichi, okay. And so he's dealing with, basically, and again, the mechanic who I think, Sozaku? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
I don't remember the mechanic's
name. But he's only in it he's kind of bookends the movie. But he basically blames Koichi for getting everyone killed I think very clearly
is ridiculous. Yeah,
him not. I mean, obviously because Godzilla's involved and stuff, but him and his plane, like, there's no.
Well, I think he blames him for not pulling the trigger. Right, like that's the thing. Is
right. So he froze when he had the chance to shoot.
Yeah, Godzilla attacks this island, and
I guess the survivor's guilt is more later. But we know that if Koichi didn't fire on Godzilla, that didn't make a difference.
It wasn't going to matter.
He's impenetrable. Yeah. His gun would not have done anything. But he blames him, and then like Joe said, he throws the pictures of all the family of the people that died, and you know, really messes with him, and so he goes home to just totally demolishes Tokyo.
Yeah, but it's not. Yes. It's not because of Godzilla. Like they're still dealing with the aftermath of the bombs and the fire raids and all that stuff.
And this is where he goes back, and townspeople are blaming him because they know he's a kamikaze pilot.
Yep.
And he comes back, and it's like, wait, you survived, and you know, and he gets all that crap for it being dishonorable, and then that woman that becomes one of the main characters, she said that if you would have done your job, then my kids would still be alive. Which again, that's more like where it's like, okay, him not doing that did not correlate to
no
the whole town being destroyed.
But I mean, you could see like that, you know, that whole village was destroyed, and I like, he walks up to his home and he's like, where did my parents survive? And she's like, no, you idiot.
Yeah. They just keep heaping it on him, right? You know, at first it's guilt for not doing his mission, guilt for not killing Godzilla, guilt for I'm not here for now my parents are dead, and everybody else is blaming me for this. So
yeah, and so that while he's trying to, you know, walk around this town, he walks through this, you know, like a market, and he sees these cops are chasing this woman who is a thief. They call her thief. She's stealing something, and she puts this baby, like, does she hand him the baby? She's like, here, take this. And he's just like, what the fuck? And it's this tiny baby. Now, there's something about this child that did not sit well with me. I think there are moments where that child's face is CG'd.
Really?
I don't know that's for sure. Okay. I can't, like, I just, there would be moments where her reaction to things, like, just didn't, there was something there. Now, I could be wrong. And it,
well, she was
could,
very
she
little.
Could just
she's
be a child,
very,
right?
She's a very little child actor, and I think to get someone that young to, you know, they didn't age, like, it doesn't flash forward that much. Like, she's little. When you see her standing there, I mean, she is tiny.
I would say she's probably, like, two.
Two, right. Yeah. It's so they don't usually have actors that young. I mean, you're either a baby or you're, like, five, six. You
sure,
can say
sure. Where you can take direction.
I do think that they basically, like, they got her to cry one time. And they're like, that's it. That's the shot where she cries. Film some other stuff around it real quick. You know what I mean? Because how you can't really get a kid that young to do all to read lines on demand and everything. So I'm sure there was some manipulation of how it was edited to her reactions.
I think that's
and
fair.
Everything. But
that's fair.
I thought she, I thought
she had some gut punch of scenes, though. I'll tell you that.
Having a kid like that in these scenes really added a lot of heart and a lot of emotion to the
which is kind of going back to my point where did I really care about Juliette Binoche getting blown up in a thing?
Who's she and where she was?
She was in the first
Brian Cranston's wife in the first one.
Yeah. And did I care about Brian Cranston? Not really.
I don't remember any of those.
But in this one, like, they spend time with these characters and I'm invested. I'm invested in all of them.
We've talked about this before though, too, Joe, is that there's a lot of movies that, especially action movies, where they think, oh, all we need to do is make stuff blow up. Right. And you know, yes, I know people want to see explosions and fighting and car chases and all that. But if you don't care about the characters, there's no stakes.
Correct.
If it doesn't matter if they'll live or die, you're not on the edge of your seat going, whatever. Even though I know in most of these movies, for the most part, they're not going to end the movie with, and all the main characters die. Like, you know that they're going to get out of it somehow, but the best movies, I think, are the ones that either, you know, you're pretty sure of what's going to happen, but you're still tense and you know, worried for the characters, or the movies, especially where you know the ending, and somehow they still get you to care, and a lot of that is through the characterization, and you care about the people.
Right, and that's what this one does. They spend so much time with everybody. They give everybody ample screen time to where you're invested in everyone, even
Quint and Brody.
That's
yeah. What did they call him here? They called him
Doc and Kid and Captain.
Captain. Yeah. That was it.
So he ends up like this. This woman hands him this child, and he's walking through. Initially, he's gonna put the baby down, but then he doesn't because he feels responsible for a child, which is fair. And he's walking back to the market, and this girl pops back up, and she's like, oh, thanks. And she takes the baby, and they end up, like, kind of building this family unit that's not based in love. It's, well, maybe not on initially, right? Like, he lets her stay in his house because she's a baby, and this woman needs help. And now, so this movie starts in 1945, right?
I believe so.
And then at the end of the war.
Yeah. So then we jump like a couple years to 1947, which is where this movie mostly takes place. And in that time, our main character gets a job. You know, it's a scary job, but he gets paid like $3,000
up front.
And she's like, what are you doing?
3,000 yen.
Well, that's so true. I was thinking, yeah, that's fair.
I mean, which I know.
I don't know what the conversion rate was back then.
I mean, yeah,
it wasn't good
further then than now. But it's also not $3,000. It's 3,000.
No, that's
yen.
Right. It's 3,000 yen.
But
that's
for
fair.
Them, I mean, you're talking about
considering he had nothing.
He's out of work. You know, he has nothing. Right. So it was a big upfront payment. And then she's like, "Why would they just give you this money?"
He's
before
like,
you do
"Well,
the job?" Well. So he's a minesweeper.
Yes, that's exactly it. So the Americans and the Japanese have littered the coastline with mines. And what the captain and the doc and the kid and our main character, what their job is to find the mines, cut them loose from wherever they're tethered, and then use this machine gun to shoot the mine from far enough away.
It's a very quiet 1947 machine gun.
Very quiet, yes. Right. It's got a silencer on it. It's fine. It's
a silencer.
I did like that. That was the excuse why it's a rickety old wooden boat.
Yes.
Is it that the mines are magnetized?
Yeah, he gets on the boat and they're like, why? Well, because at first he's like, yeah, there's a specialized boat they've built that can't be detected by mines. And then they go to it and he goes to the dock and there's yes, these two wooden, boat. Old wooden boats. But then Doc explains, he's like, well, a lot of the mines are magnetic and they'll cling to boats. That's how they get them. And so he's like, this is wooden. So.
And they were like, okay.
I mean, they weren't wrong.
They weren't wrong. So I'm trying to, do they see, has a boat already been attacked in the water? Or is
I think this is when it's already gone up a couple years by this point. It was after the, you don't see the boat attack until after he's mutated.
Yeah, so yeah, you don't see anyone.
They show the Bikini Atoll test. And
that's right, that's right, that's right.
Quick cut. You see a quick cut underwater of him getting mutated, and then that's when they run across.
And then he comes back and attacks
them, right? Because this is they've got these mines. So basically,
well, there's a there was a foreign sub, right? A U.S. sub, and they or didn't they say like, why are we? Coming
yes,
to-
that's right, that's right. Why are we looking at this thing? It doesn't make any sense. Either way, we've got now we see Godzilla. We earlier when our main character was on Odo Island, he was sitting by the water and he sees these dead like deep sea fish. And I do like
eggs coming out of their mouth. What is that?
I don't know.
They were weird looking, weren't they?
Right. Was, there's always like really a sack in the front that
I just thought they were just weird under, you know, the advantage of like stuff so far underwater
is
like you can make up whatever you want because we're never going to see it. Like it's,
you don't
want
to see it.
Yeah, I don't know. Thank you.
Have you seen those pictures of like those crazy nightmare glowing
the the angler fish?
Yeah, there's
no thank you.
Yeah,
no thank you.
Yeah, screw Jaws, whatever. I mean, who cares about Jaws? I don't want to get in the sea with that. Right, yeah.
I'm going to go about 3 feet off the coast. That's as far as I'm going. So that's kind of like the warning sign that Godzilla is coming. So our characters, they see the these same fish pop up. And, of course, our main character's like, oh, man.
Ring the bell.
Ring that bell. And this is where we see like the traditional Godzilla, like we see him pop out of the water. And I will say,
so cool looking.
Like the fact that they give him like real eyes is a million times scarier. Like just that when you see him like from like it, I'm gonna say like nose, but like basically his eyes pop up over the water. That was scary.
That's like, a great scene. This film, the cinematography is really good, and the CG blends in where. It doesn't, I mean, it's not necessarily like it's super ultra realistic. Like, you can tell that it's CG,
right.
But it blends in really well
with
the movies, so it doesn't take you out of it, where we get a lot of bad CG here that takes us out of, you know, with the big superhero movies that are $250 million budget. You know, I have to mention Mark Ruffalo's head in the Hulkbuster.
Wouldn't
be a CG discussion without it.
Yeah, right.
You know, we get all these... it doesn't match, right? The lighting is so important, and it just takes you out. In this movie, Godzilla really does feel like he blends in with the surroundings. So,
and it's during the day a lot, like that
right?
That,
which is
that attack on the town on I don't remember what it was called.
Just a part of Tokyo.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he's attacked. It's not, you know, like Ginza. Is that what it is?
Ginza.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
But it's not like Pacific Rim where it's in the day, it's at night and it's raining. This is straight up daytime, and he is wrecking the out of this town. Like it's.
But back to the boats. So
yeah, right.
He takes out their other boat, the other wooden boat, right?
No, he takes out like the warship.
Well, that comes later. But I believe, unless that's later in the movie,
I think you're right. It was two boats, and the one said they was going to come in to help, and immediately just smashed it.
They Godzilla's got them dead to rights, basically. And then this huge battleship comes out of nowhere and starts blasting them. Because then Doc explains, like, oh, they wanted us to buy them time so the big warship could get to Godzilla.
Oh, that's right.
And he realizes they're fodder. They're essentially kamikaze boats at this point, because they're just bait for him. And but the big naval ship comes out and starts blasting with these huge rounds
and takes it out immediately.
Well, it almost seems like they're going to do something, right? Like at first Godzilla's like blown back and you're like, oh wow, he's getting kind of beat up here, but then the smoke clears or whatever and he's like, yeah, no,
and just
picks up or
tears it.
The other Here we have the other one of the other Jaws things where he has the mind in his mouth.
That was the other one. Smile, you son of a bitch.
So, exactly. So they shoot the mind, blows up half his face, and you see it immediately regenerates, and they're like, oh, well, you know, that's not going to work.
Is that a common Godzilla thing?
The regeneration thing?
Yeah.
They've had that in other ones. Shin Godzilla had that a lot, actually. So, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong,
which I probably am, the Godzilla that we see in the original movie is not the same Godzilla that we see later, right?
You mean in other movies?
Yes.
This is correct. Anyone since then is a different one.
Some movies reference the original,
mm-hmm. some don't.
Okay.
Yeah. So they call him Godzilla even if he's not the original Godzilla?
That's correct. Yes.
That's his genus and species is Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a Godzilla. He's not the Godzilla. He's a Godzilla.
Right. Okay. Yeah. No, there's in a lot of the movies will reference the 1950s one as original Godzilla. Actually, they call it Millennium Area, the ones that were made in the 2000s. The Mecha Godzilla then was built. This is so bizarre. It was built around the bones of the original Godzilla. And then the gimmick in this is that his spirit is also in there and kind of takes control of it. Okay. You know, there's really weird stuff that happens.
That's awesome. I love that kind of stuff. So we do get the Jaws reference where they're releasing the mines that they have already on the boat, and one of them doesn't work. Like the little trigger is gone. So our main character is kind of a crack shot. So he lines up his shot, and he takes the shot, and he blows up this mine in Godzilla's mouth, and like Matt said, it blows half of his face off, but then it regenerates.
Very cool looking effect.
It is very cool. So Godzilla does then attack the warship and just obliterates it. And I do like that our three characters are like, huh, that's not good.
By the way, this was a new effect that I've not seen in a previous Godzilla movie where his atomic beam causes a mushroom cloud.
I was going to ask,
every time it hits.
Which I thought was insanely that was effective neat. And a little, you know, it's definitely sending a visual message from what happened over in that country.
Really cool effect of how he charges that up.
I was going to ask the same thing.
Is that a thing? That's new to that. I've never seen that before. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, his effect. I mean, it goes all the way from his tail, the base, and the spines pop up one after another, and they start glowing blue.
Yeah.
And then out of his mouth, you know, and it's cool because this is foreshadowing for later when it charges up. But you see, like, his body's charging up, but the beam comes out of his mouth.
Yes.
So it all charges.
It was awesome. Yeah,
really, really cool looking because they zoom in on those spines. Yeah. They're like,
and it's a great, like, tension building, too, because if you know Godzilla, you know what he can do, or what that, you know, his special power is.
His heat ray, is that the technical term for it?
I think it's more like atomic breath.
That's what I call it. Yeah. But I remember in the
according to Wikipedia, it's a heat ray. So I'm just saying.
Okay, there we go. We'll call it a heat ray.
Wikipedia is never wrong.
Exactly.
We'll call it a heat ray.
I remember in the 2014 American, the legendary movie. I remember Dan saying, I completely forgot that he could do that, because he doesn't do it until the very end of the movie when he grabs that other kaiju, or Motu, I guess is what they call him in this. And he rips his jaws open and he shoots the atomic.
Oh, goes right down the throat.
Shoots the atomic breath down into his throat.
That was a cool shot.
I mean, that's the money shot, right?
That's exactly it.
You don't usually blow that at the beginning of the movie, and so it's cool that this movie doesn't necessarily have to tiptoe around. I mean, they choose not to say, oh, when's he gonna use his heat ray? It's
right.
Wow, we use it right in the first 30 minutes or whatever.
That was pretty dope.
Get into the action. Yeah, so it shows you how formidable of an opponent Godzilla is going to be, and you'd think, how on earth are they ever gonna, not only does he have all these powers, he's massive, but he regenerates,
right?
Like,
right.
At this point I'm like, what are we? How are they ever? You know, so that's the big question.
Where's Raymond Burr when you need him? That's what I say.
Do you remember what his character's name was in that movie?
No.
Steve Martin. It's kind of funny to hear it now.
That's funny. When
you watch
it,
they're like, "We're going to Steve Martin." I'm like, "What? Steve Martin?"
So in Godzilla 1985, right? Like, that's a re-edit.
That's a remake.
Oh, okay, okay.
1985 is a remake, and that's why they brought
Raymond Burr in to be the same character, right?
Same character.
Got it.
This movie balances the action. It's good they feed you action every once in a while, but really it is character driven and about this relationship and this family that they've built over the years. And so he goes back home and things are kind of tough because he's talking with the guys one night at dinner and what are they celebrating? A birthday or something? What are they? Or he got a job?
I don't remember.
I can't remember what they're celebrating. I'm just totally blanking on it. But
yeah,
they're eating dinner and it's you know, Captain and Kid and Doc are all there and you know, and then the family at their home. Oh, he's bought a house, right? He's
no, 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 no. He's it's the same house, but they renovated
okay,
the whole
okay.
thing. But, yes, but, you're right.
Yeah,
yes,
it's huge. They were in a shed basically, and now it's a house.
It's a house,
and so,
yeah.
And so they're kind of having, I guess, a housewarming party and celebrating and everything. And then they're like, oh, someone says something about
the girl
his wife.
Well, the girl calls him dad. She says dad,
yeah,
and he's like, I'm not your dad.
He says, I'm not your daddy.
And the guys are like,
later though, I'm talking about the guy says something about, oh, her cooking and all this. And he says, oh, don't covet. And he's like,
oh, yes, you're right.
He's like, I'm not married. And they all look at him because they see who they presumed was his wife, a child. They're like, what is happening here?
And he just kind of says, he's like, I collected them kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
and then, yeah. And then she says something about daddy. And he goes, I told you I'm not your daddy. And they all look at him, which rightfully so. I'm like, dude.
Which actually, one of the things that I do appreciate is those guys immediately are like, hey, like, you can't say that.
Doing?
Like, that could be damaging to her. Like, what's wrong with you? And he's like,
I mean, it was heartbreaking.
I kind of took it that he's got so much shame on him that he doesn't
absolutely.
Want her
I think you're to that. I think you're absolutely, I think, but also we get the lines later where he says, my war isn't over yet. Like,
he can't move on.
Correct.
Yeah, until,
correct.
Yeah.
I just took it. I mean, that's an interesting read. I just took it as that he's just so messed up. I didn't think of him purposely like trying to protect her. I feel like he was being a jerk, but like he's dealing with a lot of stuff. I understand.
I think it's all of the above. I think you're both, Kevin, you're both right.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to see.
Right.
I mean, you see from the beginning all the guilt he has and then people laying it on him and he feels responsible for all these deaths and he just doesn't feel like he even deserves to have a happiness and a family. And so he can't accept them as his family because he's not worthy of that. And I totally get like not wanting to bring shame on them. So
no, I think you're absolutely right. And but because there's a scene later when he goes to visit his parents and he has another breakdown. He's like, why? Basically says, it's okay for me to be happy or to me to be okay. And his life kind of moves forward. He doesn't really like, you know, he embraces his role as a father to this child. He kind of embraces his role as a partner to this woman. And then as things are beginning to be okay, the woman like says, I'm leaving, like I'm going to get a job, and you know, I deserve
of what he said.
Yes.
I mean, he totally.
Oh, you think so?
I don't think she was moving away. I think she just got a job, right?
Oh, see, I thought I took it as like you helped us for so long.
I think the neighbor was going to babysit while she.
That's you're right.
Yeah, but she says you're not going to be able to find a wife and move on with me holding you back. I think her goal was to get enough money to move out to afford a house.
She was
trying to. That's you know, and it's because of the way he acted at that dinner, and it was so heartbreaking for him to treat them this way. And again, I get where he's at and why, but at the same. And, you know, at the same time, you've got this little child and this woman, and then she sees them as this family, and he is just totally dismissing them. And so she's like, okay, well, yeah, I get it. Like, I'm not wanted here. I need to let you move on with your life. You don't want to be with us. We're a burden and all this. And, you know, he kind of is like,
that's
like,
not
he
what
realizes
I meant.
What
like,
he's done.
Right.
You know, but she's like, oh, no, it's fine. And so she goes off to get a job in Tokyo in the city.
Yeah.
And that is when Godzilla decides to return.
And this is the big set piece. Like, I think this is the big set piece, right? Like, this is very traditional Godzilla. So our main character is sitting at home, and there's alerts coming in that this...
Koichi. His name is Koichi.
Koichi, thank you. Godzilla is marching towards this coastline of Tokyo, which happens to be the town that... There's
Noriko.
Moriko.
Yeah.
Noriko.
I think there's a great scene where she's on like a train and it's a reflection of Godzilla walking towards the coast. And she like you see his reflection in the glass, in the window. And she's just like, oh, that's Godzilla. And then all hell breaks
loose. I think it was even posed as a question. It said, is that Godzilla? Which is kind of funny. Like, well, what else is it? You know?
Well, the train at first, doesn't it run into Godzilla or something?
He chomps on it.
You get a really good shot before that of you don't see him. You just see a bus go flying by in front of it.
Yes.
Where he's basically just been kicking everything in front of him.
He chomps crashes on the train.
And they all slide to one end, and they're like, oh, what? That was weird. What was that? And then the train stopped. And then you see, and I love how it focuses. Another great shot. Like you're saying, like you kind of see, but you can't really. But like, you know, the way glass, like focusing through glass, and you see a reflection of the inside, and then it goes to outside, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's Godzilla.
That's Godzilla.
It's in his mouth.
And he picks him up, picks it up, and then she's got the scene. Now, I don't remember her being a gymnast.
I mean, she is definitely like
the way she caught a bar falling down through the train,
right?
Like a Uncharted,
like Uncharted,
you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, it's just kind of
the last Mission Impossible too.
Yeah,
but it's like in the Lost World Jurassic Park when that girl swings on the bars and kicks the raptor. It's been established she's a gymnast, right? It's a silly moment, but it's like, oh, that was funny because she's a gymnast, so she did a gymnast attack.
Right.
When she falls and catches the bar and hangs there.
I think there's a way to do that scene where, like, instead of catching it with her hands, maybe she just like fall, like her arm, like she catches falls it with like her armpits, falls onto it.
Sure. Again, it's not a huge deal, but I did think like, wow, that's very talented to be falling and catch a
and
bar
catch it with your
and
hands.
Not slip, right? And then to hold on to it.
But right. Anyway. So, yeah, she ends up surviving this initial attack, and she's running through the streets
she
of Tokyo.
She drops into the water and then swims into the streets.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'd have stayed in that water. Like, I feel like that may have been a better option than trying to run through the streets.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with the Godzilla movies, right? They're always running in a straight line down the street.
Yes, correct. Yeah, right.
And before they do, or at least one of them does, I'm like, go in those alleys, go to the right, go
and
to the
then,
left.
And then they do. So
she runs into,
Koichi shows up. Like, she falls down, and he kind of shows
only
up.
Only in the movies can you find two people.
Correct. And, you're looking for the one person you're looking for.
In a huge city, yeah.
And they're running together, and they realize, I think they both realize that they're not, this isn't going to work. So as Godzilla, this is the first time we do see the atomic breath. This is the scene where he charges it and he unleashes it into the city.
But I do think this is frustrating, but it's also human nature, and I understand to stand there and watch it. But they were in the alleyway; they could have
no. They were on they were on the street.
They're standing because they're perpendicular to it.
She pushes him into the alley.
But it's there. What I'm saying is they stood there and watched. All they had to do was run away down the alleyway, but they stood there and watched, and so it's a little frustrating because, like, you guys could have escaped. You could have easily, in the 30 seconds you stood there and watched,
right?
I mean, she pushed him and he was good, you know. So yeah. It's a little bit convoluted plot wise to just have them stand there and watch and then
it's tough though. I do wonder, like, you know, that'd be a thing, like, as a person, what would I do in that situation?
I know, and that's what I'm saying. I kind
you're watching
the nature of it. It's
a skyscraper-sized lizard unleash atomic breath. You're like, holy, what is happening?
I know. So maybe they're frozen like a deer in the headlights.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Right.
This town, this village, this part of Tokyo has gone through a rebuilding process in the last 2 years, and they've rebuilt this entire thing in the town, and then here comes Godzilla and just destroys the entire thing again. So there
start
is
all over.
But there is like a heartbreaking moment where, like, they tell you that this town was ravaged during the war and they've rebuilt it, and now you're watching Godzilla destroy it again. Two or three years later.
Exposition news on the on the rooftop.
I think that's great. Like, it's so well done, and the way they film this thing, where you basically see the atomic bomb go off in the distance, and then there's just the aftershocks of everything that's coming, and it's destroying everything in its path. And Noriko pushes Koichi like into the alley. And then she gets swept up in the thing. So this life that Koichi has built is now destroyed again.
Should have tackled him into the alley. See?
Right. Yeah.
She is super strong. She pushed him with one arm into an alley. She held on to the she might have super strength.
She may have. spoilers.
That might explain later on.
Yeah. So now our main character is completely broken. That this was the final straw. This is it. And we find out that Doc is like this brilliant military scientist. And I do like that the captain's just like, you've done this the whole time? And he's like, well, you know, I didn't really want to bring it up. Like, the war was done with me and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. So they've devised this plan. And
oh, before you get into that, just want to mention, this is kind of unique to this movie. Government's not there to help. This is all citizens coming together. Mm-hmm. They made it clear that America won't help, and then they made it clear that the Japanese military won't help either.
Because they're worried about the Soviets.
Right.
Which or the Soviet
Union. Seems like a weird excuse, but yeah.
I like that, though. I liked that they gave them a reason for why the military isn't intervening. And post-war, after going through this, I could see them being like, yeah, we're not going to even make any attempt, like we're trying to stage another war or get revenge or, you know, whatever. Like, I get that they're like, we're laying low, right? Like, we're not going to do anything and interfere. And so the citizens, so basically the retired Navy is, and the retired general in the Navy is saying that, hey, we're the only ones that can do this because we're retired. We're not in the military, so it won't be seen as an act of aggression or misconstrued. They're going to give us 4 retired warships that were
decommissioned
and heading to wherever, and they'll turn them around and let us use them. But this is interesting, too. Instead of the whole town just being like, yeah, let's go get them, they're like, this is crazy. We just survived the war, and you want us to go fight? And
I do like that the guy asks in the town hall meeting, he's like, I can't force you to do it. And like 5 or 6 guys are like, cool,
and they walk
see ya.
Out, right? I know. It was very realistic in that
good
regard.
Good luck.
You usually get the big movie scene where everyone's just like, rah, rah, and you get that at the end. But I like how people were actually like, yeah, I'm out. This is crazy.
No, thank you. I don't want anything to do with that.
But
so
the plan is interesting. I thought the plan that Doc comes up with, I've never seen. It's not, let's load a bomb
up,
drop it through this and whatever. It's like, wow, using the pressure of the ocean, we're going to use...
sink him.
But using
like,
gas?
It was,
Freon. It was Freon.
Freon, because of its density or whatnot, is going to pull him down to the depths of the ocean where the pressure... And if that doesn't work, he's going to inflate with a huge balloon and bring him to the top, and that change in pressure will then make him explode. So
I did like that he had a backup plan. We're not gonna do everything on this one thing.
Yeah, he had a plan B, which was pretty good.
And if this doesn't work, we're gonna drop a bomb on him, right? Like, it just the using pressure, using the ocean and nature.
I thought they were trying to freeze him. I thought the Freon and going to the bottom of the ocean was trying to freeze him.
I think they said something about the Freon made the water around him dense and would make him sink.
Okay. That makes sense.
It would just make him sink, but the pressure, it's because that's why diver, you know, the bends or whatever, you know, you have to decompress. You can't, you know, and if you go, well, I mean, you know, with that boat, that submarine, right? I mean, if you're down that deep and you get a little change in pressure, like a hole,
boom,
the whole thing implodes because it can't take that pressure. And so they're trying to make him go down so deep that even though he's huge and obviously extremely strong, the ocean is stronger in theory. And I liked it too that they're like, well, then if he comes back up, the decompression or whatever will explode him.
Should explode him, right?
This so is they've figured out that they've never carried out this experiment yet.
They didn't have a way to run a test run on this.
No. So they find like this deepest part of the coastline where they can kind of lure him into this spot, and then kind of Empire Strikes Back him, where they have these two boats that have the Freon charges like around them, and they're just gonna like circle him. So that
reminds me of Jaws. It makes me think of the barrels.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Totally.
He's going to wear these Freon charges like a belt, but they have to get him into this certain spot for this to work.
So they're going to rope him with their little boats like they do the mine sweeping, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But it does remind me of like the TIE fighters circling the AT-ATs.
Oh, yeah.
And making him fall, straight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So our main character realizes this is the opportunity. He has to, like, I can end this. The only way we can do this, if you can get me a plane, I can, like, lure him. And they find this experimental plane that they only made, like, 6 of, but the one they found does not work. And the doc basically says, do you know anyone that could fix a plane? He's like, I got a guy.
But, I don't know if he wants to see me, but...
Yeah, but they can't find him. So he ends up, like, doing all of this.
That's Sozaku.
Yes, that's the guy from the very beginning of the
mechanic,
movie.
Yeah.
he ends up writing all of these letters and basically says what happened on Odo Island is your fault. If you had been a better leader, like none of this would have basically taunting him. And then this guy shows up and he knocks out our Koichi and kind of gives
him the
guff. You
know what
I like
real quick, though? I just want to stop real quick, because what I like when we talk about realism, and as much realism as you can have in a giant Godzilla movie, but I like that they at least try to make it seem like certain things exist in a real world. So when he goes to the office and he says, I'm trying to locate someone, and they go, we're pretty busy here, we're pretty backed up, everyone's trying to locate people from the war and the Godzilla attack and everything, and he's right. Like, but this is very important, and he's like, everyone says this is very important, you know, like I like that he didn't just walk in and they're just like, oh yes, we have this in the registry right here, we found him, you know, they act like, you're crazy, dude, there's all these people, get in line, we'll start the hunt in a few weeks or whatever,
maybe.
And that's where he gets the idea of, I'm just gonna write everybody and see if this guy turns up. So it was
and he does.
I just like that they played it a little more realistic.
They've done the whole, you know, bureaucracy and red tape messing up. Again, not to derail off this, but if you watch Shin Godzilla, a lot of that movie's about that, about which division is in charge of taking care of him.
You know? Interesting. It's about taking care of Godzilla.
Yeah, they're like, well, it's not my problem. He's in the water. Now it's this department's. Now he's on land. Now it's this person's problem. It's actually really funny.
That's what would happen in real life.
Isn't that a plot point in one of the Fargo seasons where, like, they find a body that's on, like, that could be considered like the state line, so they're like, I don't know, that could be this guy's case, or half the body's on this side, so that's kind of my case too. I don't know.
That's the one with Godzilla and Gamera are teaming up. They're the two main characters.
They can't do that. No cross promotion from those two. The guy shows up, and basically Koichi says, "Look, I can't stop. Like this is it for me. This is the end of my war isn't over yet," which I think is a great line. Mm-hmm. And
he tells that to the woman, Noriko, at first, which I
thought that's
really
right. Yes, that's right. That's right.
She's like, what? Why can't you? You know, we can be happy here or whatever. And he says, my war isn't over.
My war isn't over.
Callback later. You know,
it is a great callback.
Yeah.
So basically the mechanic says, fine, like I'll fix this plane.
And you can finally do the honorable thing.
He does.
You got to do this. Yeah.
And that's what he does. And they fix this plane and they've got this plan. And
they leave the little girl with the neighbor and money.
He does. Like, basically, he has a really good, you know, talk with her and with the little girl. And then there's
when she draws him that picture and then gives it to the mechanic, all the people's families that died, and then leaves him with the only picture he has of the family, which is the crayon drawing picture.
Yes.
What a great moment.
It's funny. Like there was a moment. So the mechanic is basically laying out what they took out a bunch of fuel tanks and they added bombs instead of fuel. You know, this is basically a flying bomb is what this thing is going to be, because Koichi's plan is he's going to fly this plane into the mouth of Godzilla.
And took out
blow
all
his
the weapons
head off
and everything and had him retrofit it with the bomb.
Yeah, he's got the machine guns, but he's got bombs and, you know, there's less fuel in the plane. It's just they could fit more stuff in it. And so there's a conversation that happens where the mechanic's like, look, if you're ready to arm this bomb, you pull this lever. And the camera pans away and you could see them having a conversation. And I was like, maybe.
I didn't get, this movie to me, it was really good at planting that.
It hit it very well.
Yeah.
I got it. And I'll just explain how I figured out why he was whispering to him.
You saw The Dark Knight Rises?
That too. But earlier, I think it was Doc that was giving the speech of like, hey, screw nationalism. We don't have to die. Can we do... You know what I mean? There's no honor in dying. So, you know, they said, you know, we outfitted all of our planes with no ejector seats. And I don't know if you noticed when the mechanic was working on the plane, the seat was in German. It was like
I didn't notice that. Interesting.
Yeah. So I think that was the, you know, hint, this has an ejector seat.
Okay. You know? Okay. Cool. Interesting. Yeah. That's a good catch.
Yeah.
So our plan is we begin the plan, right? Godzilla's coming. Koichi jumps in the plane and he takes off. And I got to tell you, you know, we've talked about how in the first Avengers, that theme is kind of meh. Right. Like it doesn't have the same impact in that first one that it does have
Alan Silvestri's theme, but planted it.
They did, and I think they do it. But it's a good theme, but it didn't have like the impact that it does in Endgame, right? Like when Cap catches the hammer.
Yet, I mean, it was the first time they ever used it, right?
Oh, sure.
I mean,
but they've used it post.
I think at the time it was a very good theme. I don't think you could dismiss it. I think what you're trying to say, though, is that they invoked it at the right time.
Yes.
You know, it's like the Creed
when
they bring that theme in when Koichi's flying through the air, and man,
don't they play that, he's destroying the city? Isn't
they
it like
do
the
they do
like,
but
dun,
it's
dun,
it's
dun,
like, they do play it then. Go ahead, man.
For super nerds, earlier in it they use the theme from the original King Kong versus Godzilla, the island theme.
Oh, nice. That's fun.
They work that in there. Yeah, that
you could tell
that was great.
There was stuff that they were planting in there for the fans, and even though I haven't seen a lot of the movies, they were recognizable, the themes that I kept hearing pop up, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah,
but even beyond using those themes, the score itself was really good.
It is.
No, I think it's really good. It's really, really good. But they ramp up kind of the I'm going to call it like the hero theme. You've got like the main, like, you know, the main dun 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 dun, and then there's another theme underneath it that kind of that you hear earlier. But in this one, when Koichi is flying towards Godzilla, they ramp up that second part, and it hits harder when you see him flying through the air and he's shooting the guns at Godzilla and he's luring him into the spot, and he does exactly what he's gonna do. He gets him out there. They wrap the Freon around him. Things are working, and then they hit it, and it works. He's about to unleash the atomic breath. The Freon goes off. It sucks him to the bottom, and it doesn't kill him. It just leaves him there. And then the balloons inflate, and they bring him back up, but he chews the balloons off, and he stops at like 800 meters, and they can't bring him back up. And almost like the Avengers, like, here come all of the salvage tugboats that said they weren't going to help, and now they're going to help.
That was Kid leading that charge.
They didn't want Kid on the boat. So he gathers up the extra salvagers, and they bring Godzilla back to the surface. But he's not damaged enough.
Kid is Captain America catching the hammer.
That's really. But Godzilla is not damaged enough. He is still able to attack, and he's about to unleash the atomic breath when, out of nowhere, comes Koichi, and he knows what he has to do, and he's flying. Doc and the captain and the kid are all just like, "Please don't do this! Like, you don't have to do this." And he sees a picture of his not wife, like, that he's, you know, Rocketeer style, he's posted in the airplane, and it's very well shot, where you just see the plane rocket into Godzilla's mouth.
I like when they do the thing where it's not like, you know, when someone takes a BB gun and hits a car and it explodes, like a Michael Bay type thing.
Sure.
Like, in this one, it flies in the mouth and it's just like conk.
You know, it just sits there for a second.
And then it explodes. But I like that when a movie does it more realistic, again, where it's like not everything just has an insane, you know, like a car falls off a cliff and it has to explode.
Sure.
In movies, you've got all these explosions for it. You know, someone knocks into a car. And
my best friend and I growing up used to watch movies all the time. And we would always, anytime we would see like a car flip or do something, we're like, there was an air ramp. And it was, you know, like cars would do like these ridiculous barrel rolls for no reason, like they hit a bunch of cardboard boxes and they flip over on their,
and they,
you know,
like twist through the air.
Yeah, like stuff, those were just cardboard boxes. Like, well, I don't think a car would do that.
I mean, and it's fun, but it is kind of cool when a movie does it more, like the physics are more reasonable. And before this bomb goes off, it's like, oh yeah, that plane just crashed into this monster's mouth.
Right. And then the plane blows up and blows up half of Godzilla's head.
That was a really cool effect.
It was very cool. Very cool.
This time it's done a lot more damage than the, the original mine in the mouth. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it literally like blows half of his head off.
Yeah.
So Godzilla like sinks into the water. And this is where he
kind of falls into pieces too. Cause
that was cool.
Yeah. He was charging up the heat ray.
His nuclear cord just kind of just starts poking out of his sides.
And he kind of just he kind of just falls apart.
It was like the laser, you know, when a laser cuts a person into pieces.
Kind of. Yeah.
You know, but it was from the inside, but it was similar to like, or, you know, someone slices someone in half and their halves fall apart.
Yeah,
it was
he
blasted from all these parts through his body. And then you just see the chunks fall into the water. It was a really cool effect.
It was pretty dope. Yeah. So we see everybody kind of like looks off into the sky and we see that.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So if Godzilla can regenerate, do you get a whole bunch of little Godzillas off
that's
each piece? Right?
That's
it's that whole
a good
thing like
question.
A worm when a worm
okay,
gets cut in half.
Okay, by the way,
back.
If you want to know that, watch, like I said, watch Shin okay. Godzilla. You'll see just how bizarre okay. that notion gets taken by the end of that movie.
Okay, because yeah. it's like, it's interesting when you see something like that happen. It's like, are the limbs just dead and then you have to grow off the head because the brain's there? Like, how does the regeneration work? And yeah, could you get 12 Godzillas now running around and. I don't know, but it's an interesting.
What was the one? What is Matt? Isn't
like Sorcerer's Apprentice? You cut up the
right
the mop, and now there's a bunch of mops.
Isn't there, Matt? Isn't there one Godzilla movie where one Godzilla has to fight a bunch of different like versions of Godzilla?
Not that I've ever seen. Well, and there's Godzilla Final Wars.
He
fights all the different monsters, but one of them he fights is the Matthew Broderick Godzilla.
Okay.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Which, and to make it even more funny, all the monsters in that movie are men in suits except for that. That one's CGI.
Oh, my gosh.
And even better, the fight between Japanese Godzilla and American Godzilla lasts all of like 15 seconds. He just kills them immediately.
You think they're trying to say something there?
Maybe
they were. Which was amazing that Roland Emmerich allowed him to use that to make a joke.
That's funny. Man, that trailer's still one of my favorite trailers, that initial teaser trailer for Godzilla.
Yeah.
I'm guessing
the movie wasn't great.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich probably doesn't get in charge of that. I'm guessing that's Fox going, yeah, for $10 million yeah, sure. you can license this Godzilla. Yeah.
So we see that Koichi actually did eject and he got out of there.
That was a cool moment with the parachute when you see him, because they're all looking like, oh, he sacrificed himself. Everyone's all sad. And you see out of the smoke in the distance a parachute.
You see him dropping down. And then we cut back to the conversation he had with the mechanic, and the mechanic says, look, he hands him the picture of his kid, of the family that the kid drew, and he hands him back the little packet of pictures, and the mechanic has a moment where he looks at him, he's like, okay, look, there's this lever back here it's an ejector seat and you can get out. You don't have to die for this. Like, you can see the pain on his face. Yeah.
He goes, live.
Yes.
You know, he tells us you need to live. And you know, this is, you're making this right. You're doing the honorable thing and you can live your life.
I think it was the forgiveness that he had been looking for the whole time.
Yes. Mm. So. I think you're absolutely right. And we should say that earlier, before this whole set piece takes place, the woman across the way who's watching the daughter gets a telegram. We don't know what's on it. Initially, I thought it was going to be a letter from Koichi. That's what I thought that it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they were trying to make it look like it. You know,
yeah. Which they do a great job of it. Right.
Yeah.
So the ship comes back and everybody's there. And again, Matt, to this point earlier, where this woman
not
does
everyone.
Run
Godzilla's
up.
Godzilla's not there.
That's true. Godzilla does not make it back. That's a good point.
he's there with a top hat and a mustache.
Yeah, he's like, hey, fellas, I made it back.
He's the size
hey,
of
hey, fellow humans.
Yes.
Hey, fellow humans. That's really good. Don't mind me. Matt, to your point earlier where Koichi finds his partner in this massive crowd, of course, now our nanny does the same thing where she runs in and she finds him and hands him this telegram and he reads it. And even now I'm just like, the hell's going on? And
Ryan called it. I did not call it.
It's a great.
It seemed so far-fetched and it still seems far-fetched.
Yes.
When this goes down, flashback to the big set piece we talked about in Tokyo when Godzilla's smashing buildings and everyone's running down the street away from him and he's stomping people and it's a great destruction scene. And then they're standing there right next to the alley and he lets off his heat ray and things are flying, cars, buildings, vehicles, heat ray, whatever is going. And she pushes him into the alleyway and he miraculously survives. And you see her get blown away into the heat ray. So I think that's a little cheap when movies do this thing where they make it so impossible. I like it when there's a mystery left open, but when you make it so impossible, it seems like a cheat, right?
Sure.
I think off camera there was a pillow factory right behind it.
Right. Exactly. So it's a little bit of a cheat. Like if there's a plausible way, if there's a plausible way where it could actually happen, then
yeah,
you can be, your mind's blown. You're like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that coming. But it's like they showed us like there's no way that's happening. And so when she gives then, the so letter, but, and it flash forwards to the hospital,
and then I was like, god damn it.
And then as soon as you see that, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, you know exactly what's going to happen. He runs up and she's there in the bed, and she's got bandages all over her face, and man, her line
she's
delivery
her
is
she's lost
yeah right. Yeah. The line delivery is so fucking
good.
It's so good. Where she just looks at him, they look at each other, and she's like, is your war over? Yeah. And that's how this movie ends, like on that line. And it's like, god damn it.
The only thing I didn't like about this moment, as sweet, and I know they were trying to be dramatic, and that was a great line, when he walks in, the little girl that has not seen her mother in months.
That's fair.
He goes,
that's
like
what makes
this.
You think that girl wasn't real.
He goes like this, plop. And then goes and talks to her. They never. I mean, that little girl would be like, "Mommy," and run to her.
Right.
Sets her to the side so he can go up to her and have that moment. And I'm like,
"That's
oh,
really
come
funny."
On. That was a perfect opportunity for a family moment. There's no reason the little girl couldn't run to her, and then she couldn't look at him and go, "Is your war over yet?" Like, I just don't like that. It almost made me laugh just because the way he sat her down over to the side and then walked past her. I'm like, "What?"
The guy next to the guy is again sold out theater. Which I love. Like I have missed being in theaters like this.
Well, Alamo's almost always sold out. You know.
So here's the thing. It's not though. Like for first run movies, it's not sold out almost ever. Hmm. The older stuff, right? If you go see Die Hard or Halloween or you know things like that, that stuff is sold out.
I don't know, man. When I looked at Napoleon and I looked at Hunger Games, those were both like.
Hunger Games was close. Yeah, and I saw that on the big screen. Like that one was
close. By the
way,
I'm glad that Alamo Drafthouse is doing well.
Me too. Mm-hmm. I was a little worried about the location, but it is. It's doing. I love it.
I will say, I got to throw this in there, though. Have you guys been to the Marcus Chesterfield recently?
Is that the newly renovated one?
Newly by 6-7 years ago or whatever, yeah.
Oh, no. Then no,
I mean, it's been quite a while, but you know, they changed when they bought it from Werenberg, they changed it to like the Ultra Screen Deluxe and the Super Screen Deluxe and all that stuff. So they upgraded all their sound is Dolby Atmos now.
Oh,
and it sounds great.
That's nice.
It sounds great.
I saw this in a Dolby theater and it shook the place.
Yeah. Right?
Dolby.
I felt bad for whoever was watching movies in the theater next door. I felt bad because
they were
hearing Godzilla the whole time.
All the people that saw the Beyonce movie next in theater three, those poor bastards, like they didn't know what was coming.
Everyone always bragged about Atmos and everyone on the coasts and all over online are always bragging about it. And we didn't have any, if we did, it was like not many of the theaters. So I will say I've seen two different theaters. One was the big ultra screen at the Marcus Chesterfield, and then one was just a smaller auditorium. Both had Dolby and both sounded amazing. So
that's
awesome. Is a huge upgrade. And I think they realize they've got to compete if, you know, they don't want everyone even to go to Alamo and all that. So I'm happy to see them upgrading that. And it was loud and clear.
Yeah.
And, Napoleon was the same way, right? So that was the one in the smaller screen, still Atmos. That is the way to watch a movie.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that's how this movie ends. And I do. And I think
until
that's true.
There was a weird, I don't know if you noticed it. They kind of focused on it just a little bit. She had like a radiation burn on her neck.
I did see that.
I have to watch the movie again. It looked like it was in the shape of something.
I initially thought it was like a tattoo, but
yeah. I need to see the movie again just to see. I wasn't quite sure why they kind of lingered on that for a second.
It's a Monarch logo.
Yeah, exactly. We're tying into the TV show. It's all connected, you see.
It's all connected. They cut away from our three main characters, and we see chunks of Godzilla still floating in the water, and then, of course, he starts to regenerate.
Starts to
regenerate. And
which,
it's like,
this was
and it plays
the end,
theme.
By the way, this was the exact end of that movie, GMK, that I was talking about, came out in 2001.
Oh,
okay.
Same thing.
Okay.
They blow him up from the inside. And everything's great, and at the end, it shows his heart on the ocean floor start to beat again. So
it's
that's what he's kind of borrowing.
This is unbelievable. Like, it was cool. This is an unbelievable film. This is in my top five for the year. Like, I think.
Me too.
It's not just because it's a Godzilla movie. Like, they're telling a legit story, and there's character moments, and there's character turns, and they just do an amazing job of kind of taking a Godzilla movie and working in a story that's really well done.
This is the only one that I've seen. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that this seems like what the American ones try to do by introducing all these characters, but you end up just not caring about them because they're not well written.
Right.
That is exactly what I said.
All the other movies,
with
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and Bryan Cranston and all them, I couldn't tell you one memorable thing about them other than I thought it was weird because it's like we just saw them, they're related. But the one with Millie Bobby Brown, and I couldn't tell you one other person in that movie,
Vera Farmiga.
Okay. Yeah, I totally forgot she was the mom. You're right. So I don't care. Like, they're not well written characters. It's not a good script, and they focus too much on the special effects. And I get it. Mm-hmm. You want to see Godzilla. You want to see smashing and all that. But I think that's what the American ones are trying to do. And correct me if I'm mistaken, Matt, but to me it seems like most Godzilla movies, maybe not these recent really good ones, but to me I'm like, oh, that's just a guy smashing a bunch of stuff. There's not a bunch of good character development and story to them. Like,
this is honestly I've seen every Godzilla movie many times. This is the only one where I cared about the people.
Yeah.
In fact, so much so that if you took Godzilla out of this, it would still be a good movie.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely right.
If it was some other reason that brought these people together, like, you know, the war or natural disaster, whatever it is, it would still be a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's effective. The commentary that this movie is about guilt and trauma and surviving, and it has so much to say, and they use Godzilla as the enemy or the looming threat, but it's about the internal struggles. It's about these characters and what Koichi's dealing with and his struggle and being able to forgive yourself so that you can move on. And, you know, no one's perfect. And again, I think we all can relate and we all realize, like, he does not need to be that hard on himself.
Right.
And, but it's hard. Sometimes you beat yourself up and it's about, you know, you do deserve to live, and what the mechanic says at the end, live.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, live your life, you deserve to do that. So I just think it has a lot to say. And so Godzilla, you could take him out, you could replace him with whatever the other threat is and
anything
still
else
the same story, right?
Yeah.
Kevin, do you have a box office on this by chance, like how much it's made? Curious.
So far, what I see, on Wikipedia says that on a $15 million budget, it's already made $27.9 million.
That's amazing.
And I thought I had a link to Box Office Mojo. Let me refresh this here.
Meaning it's made that in Japan or it made that here already?
That would be worldwide, so I don't know what
Okay. And by the way, this is the quickest I've seen a movie from Japan to get here.
Yes.
It only opened like a month ago.
Thinking the same thing. It kind of reminds me of Shaun of the Dead, where Shaun of the Dead got released over in the UK first and then kind of had a second life here. I'm curious what it did in the US, just because it has been out for a little bit in Japan, and I feel like it's got legs, like this thing, literally and figuratively. Like, it,
an article I saw said it made, I think, 5 million on Friday.
That's great.
I think it's not making money like the Beyonce movie does, but it's also not as many screens.
I didn't realize that came out.
It did. Yeah, and it's up against
unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately, Beyonce movie bumped Godzilla from a lot of the IMAX screens because it was filmed to look good in IMAX, and then, you know, American theaters are like, no.
We're going to show the Beyonce movie.
Yeah.
From
a financial standpoint, that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
You gotta do what you got to do.
But it's also up against the John Woo Christmas classic, Silent Night.
Have you seen it?
No.
Oh. No, it looks horrible. It looks horrible.
It looks fine. It does. It's whatever.
No, it looks really bad.
Wait, was last year Violent Night? Was that the David Harbour Santa movie?
I didn't see.
And now this year we get Silent Night.
Violent Night is better. No, it looks bad in a bad. Like, if it's. It looks bonkers, right? In a John Woo way. And I'm like, okay, I hope this is just nonstop insane fun. But everyone who's seen it says it's just terrible.
Yeah, so, that's a shame.
And the idea there's no dialogue in the movie?
Yeah, because he gets shot in the throat. So he doesn't talk.
But to have it be called Silent Night and he can't talk, like, there's I mean, John Wick hardly talks. Like, there's a cool, a cool action thing without the character talking. I think that's a fine concept. But the way the trailer's cut, because I did see this one in the theaters when we saw something else, and it is so freaking bad. It is.
It looks,
ridiculous. So this movie was tracking to make $8 million, and if you said it made $5 million on Friday, it could get, I think.
It could do that. It could pull that off. Yeah.
They may have been rolling in Wednesday, Thursday figures into that Friday.
True. So, anyway,
but either way, like,
because I saw this on Wednesday night.
Oh, nice.
It's up to almost 5 million domestically at this point of recording, but overseas it has made 23.1 million.
Good. So good. Yeah.
Overseas, Japan.
So I highly if you can catch this in a theater right now, I highly recommend it. It's not for kids. Like, I think a lot of the later Godzilla movies are kind of not geared towards kids, but are kid friendly. This one is not. Like, this one is definitely more of an adult movie, a grown up movie. And I mean, not an adult movie. That's a different thing altogether. But like a grown up movie. But it's absolutely worth your time, and I cannot recommend this thing enough. It's so good.
Why is it called Godzilla Minus One?
I think the explanation was that Tokyo, or Japan in general, was at zero at the end of the war, and now it's like even worse.
Oh.
Now we're going into the negatives. Yeah.
Okay.
I will say, I may have to see it again before I rank it, but when I came out of there, I was like, this is the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen in my life. I've seen them all.
This is the first movie this year that I remember being like super hyped for, and it delivered.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I had expectations. Yeah. It went way above them. Up that way.
It's a good movie. That's the thing. It's a good, not just good Godzilla movie, but it is good. And a lot of that, you got to owe to the writing that they flesh these characters out. And like we said, you know, make us care about the characters or else they're just fodder.
Right. That's exactly right. All right. So I think that does it for this episode. Let's go around the table and everybody can tell them where to find each other.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and subscribe to Circle of Wizards for all your retro gaming fun.
And Matt, what about you? Want to find you anywhere?
Oh, this is Matt. You can find me on Instagram at MattReedy219.
You've got some great Godzilla prints.
You do have some great Godzilla prints.
I've got a couple.
Yeah.
And this is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21, also on Letterboxd at the same. And until next time, Kong and Godzilla team up.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.